Love, Lust, and Laughter with Dr. Diana Wiley and Billy Sage, Fridays at 6 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Aloha, and welcome to another scintillating edition of Wiley and Sage, Love, Lust, and Laughter. I am the Honolulu sidekick, Bill Sage, along with our genial, gracious, lovely host, Dr. Diana Wiley. And this week, back once again for part two of an amazingly erudite and yet arousing set of discussions, Dr. Paul Jonanides, the author of The Guide to Getting It On, which is also found at guidetogettingiton.com. With that scintillating introduction, I know you have lots of questions from last week if you were listening, and also if you'd like to call in and ask those questions, our studio line is 1-888-874-4888. And now here to get it on conversationally with our wonderful audience is Dr. Diana Wiley.
Hello, everyone, and I'm so pleased to be back this week for part two with our wonderful guest, Paul Jonanides, and I just wanted to welcome him again, but also before I do that, quote Violet Blue, who is a sex educator and author, and she says about Guide to Getting It On, this is a huge book that covers it all in a very hilarious tone that delivers oodles of information yet remains expressly respectful to the reader at all times. I'm pleased to say that I can recommend it to pretty much everyone. It is the very best sexual anatomy illustrations I've ever seen. Good luck in finding a topic not in this fabulous book. Make his one centerpiece of your library and augment with topic-specific books. And that was very nice from Violet Blue. Paul, do you know her personally?
No, I don't know Violet personally. We've never met in person. We've communicated a few times, but that's extremely kind of her.
Yes, well, you got so many good reviews. And so your book is now in its sixth edition. You know, in the past, I should have asked you this off the air, but I know how generous you are with your book. If somebody, the first person who calls in with a question, could that person receive your book?
If they're in the continental United States or even Alaska or Hawaii,
yay.
Yeah. Unfortunately, yeah. It is a four-pound book, and it's so expensive to ship out of
country. Of course. Lou Padgett was on this program a couple of times, and she offered her book, How to Be a Great Lover, and we actually, it was enough incentive that we got one of our rare callers. So I was thinking, you were so generous because you gave, I think, pretty much every ASECT member, ASECT is American Association for Sex Educators, Counselors, and Teachers, a copy of your book. And I already owned a copy, but I was so glad to have a second one. And, of course, your book is being used in lots of universities and medical schools and by lots of us sex therapists who refer it to our clients a lot.
Well,
so,
thank you very much.
Yes. So, you know, I know that you were a psychoanalyst for, did you tell me, 17 years in Los Angeles?
Yes.
Yeah. And
wait, you mean they have crazy people in L.A.? The hell you say? I can't believe that. I'm sorry. I was shocked to discover that.
It's a great place to train if you're going into mental illness.
Yes. When we spoke last week, Paul, you and I, we were talking about that very thing, and I complained because I had my last sojourn in L.A. just before I moved here 2.5 years ago. And the overarching narcissism just seems to feed into so much of life there. But I was thinking about the history, and sexuality has occupied a central role in the field of psychology. And we go back to the father of psychoanalysis, Sigmund Freud, and it was his hypothesis that our sexual instincts were the driving force in our personality, and if these forces went awry, he theorized, our psyches would end up doing the same. And as I understand it, Paul, and I would like you to comment on this, current thinking reverses the cause and effect, and so that we have psychological neuroses and so psychoses influence our sexuality so that anxiety, guilt, and extreme self-consciousness, for example, negatively affect our sexual expression. whereas at the other extreme, we have sociability and confidence and, oh, I don't know, maybe even exhibitionism and can positively facilitate it. Do you agree with that kind of reverse from Sigmund Freud to the current thinking?
Well, the current thinking is so all over the place. I'm not sure. It depends who
yeah.
you ask.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in terms of the current thinking, we've got people who believe that there's such a thing as sex addiction and people who go insane at the mere mention of sex addiction.
Those would be the people that need the sex addiction treatment, right?
Well,
he's gone insane.
There's questions of, there's just so many questions. I don't know. I guess I need a more specific question to me to be able to give you a more specific answer.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, I'm biased, but I think that psychotherapy, you know, it used to be that it was for only the sick, and now we know it can help lots of people. And I know that it's helped lots of older people. I'm a gerontologist, as many in the listening audience know, and I've counseled with older people and helped them sometimes retrieve their sense of self-worth and maybe to forgive others and themselves. And I even helped one woman in her mid-70s to have an orgasm for the first time. And that was really exciting for her. And I had another 76-year-old woman. She told me that somebody asked why she was seeking therapy at her age, and she reflected both on her losses and her hopes, and she said, "Doctor, all I've got left is my future." So it's never too late to get some help and to read a good book like yours.
Yeah, well, in terms of the question you ask about Freud's way of looking at things, I'm always remember Freud's two things from Freud, which is mm-hmm. one is that our job is, you know, to be healthy, we need to be able to work hard and to play hard.
Yes, yes, he's famous for that.
And
I rather like that.
Yeah, I think that's pretty interesting. And I think he also said first and foremost the ego, which is, depending on whose translation we look at, but the ego is the way we think, our cognitive functions, our executive mental functions, our judgment, things like that. The ego is first and foremost a body ego, so it comes out of our sensations as we were infants with our body.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we get so wrapped up in the intellectual that we lose track of the body often.
Mm. And that's why one of the homework assignments that I give often is sensate focus, which was a term developed by Masters and Johnson, where the person who is giving and then giving pays attention to how it feels to touch maybe the face, the hands, and the feet the first time through, leaving out the genitals, and then for the receiver to really pay attention, to stay very mindful and in the moment, to get back into the body, because so many people do get out of the body.
Yeah. I'm wondering how much drug addiction is really an attempt. In some ways, I don't know. I'm thinking if you're taking drugs and to a point of where you probably shouldn't be, I wonder if it isn't a way to quiet the mind.
Oh, perhaps. Even smoking marijuana can help people be more present. And
right,
maybe
gets you into
respond
your body.
To the sensations.
Yeah, less intellectually present, but perhaps mm-hmm. more present within the body itself. So I wonder about that.
Mm-hmm. I think it's very likely that... That is true. If people can slow down, I so often say to people, just slow down, and and be in the present and see your distracting thoughts moving away on a conveyor belt. This is especially helpful for low desire women and women who are wanting to achieve orgasm. We might have touched on this last week. But being too much in their head, so often people will ask, you know, am I normal? And of course, most therapists don't like that question very much. I think some better questions for asking about sexual choices are, is it consenting? Is it exploitive? Is it self-destructive? And I think that these criteria are not always simple, but they're more important than what's normal.
Hmm. Yeah. Those are, you know, those are important questions.
Mm-hmm.
Very important questions. It's just in Los Angeles 3 days this weekend. Boy, I'd forgotten the toll that freeway traffic takes on you.
Oh, my, yes.
And how much time you spend on the freeway often in a big city or in commuting or whatever. And I'm very aware of the amount of armor that you need to have just to make it through a day in a big city.
Mm.
And I bet it can be a challenge
for
a while to be able to relax. And maybe it doesn't feel very safe.
Well, of course, if we take that to the sexual realm, that's key. That, I mean, traditionally, men have been the protectors, and women need to feel safe with their man in order to be able to be really present and to let go, to surrender. And I agree with you. There's lots of armor in Los Angeles. And perhaps other big cities too, but but do you think there's more in LA because it's Hollywood and there's a lot of fantasy going on? And
well, no, I'm just thinking in terms of just getting to work.
Getting to work, yes.
And that would be true if you're in Chicago or New York or
Honolulu.
Honolulu, probably now. That's pretty crowded.
Our population density with the state's now 1.4 million, of which about 1.3 million plus about 500,000 visitors at any given time are on an island with less than 120 habitable square miles out of 559.
Yes.
Right. So, yeah, it's armor me. I have to go to the corner store in my car. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I saw, because the first time I lived in Honolulu was the end of the 60s, and I was my first job out of college, and I taught school there. And the traffic was not a problem. Remember, Bill, Kalakaua was two ways in those days?
Yeah, you turn they turn the traffic lights to flashing yellow after 11 o'clock at night, so everybody just be careful.
Oh, do they?
If they did it now, we could probably reduce the population by a good 100,000 by the end of the month. Just a thought.
Well, you know, last week, we were talking about hooking up, and alcohol is so often a part of it. If you're talking about the kind of hooking up, which means to have sex with someone who you just met 10 minutes ago.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
I wonder if the alcohol isn't a very necessary part of being able to just relax.
Well, it's called the great social lubrication, but as a recovering alcoholic with over 6 years in sobriety, I can say that learning in sobriety, I have found more about what relationships mean, and not just me. Thank God we have hundreds of members in their 20s that have been sober for over 10 years, meaning they started to get sober late in teen, to find wisdom among kids that young, and the degree of compassion and caring, I think it's a godsend for the whole population, especially because these kids, especially young unwed mothers, will have children that grow up knowing a sober parent who cares and does for others. So,
now, what did you find that the alcohol would do in terms of relaxation that you couldn't do intellectually without it?
Well, ironically, I was so much of a drunk I never knew, because I was pretty much buzzed all the time. I was one of those functioning alcoholics, and by the time I got away to college, I was either smoking weed or having a beer throughout my whole career, and it never cost me a job. I was just as glib and funny, so they say. But to some people, a lot of people say it just helps them to get over whatever fear, in co-ed or otherwise, prevents them from being able to interrelate, or just numbs whatever inadequacy caused by whatever. And so they just sort of ride roughshod over that, which tends to make them feel inadequate.
Well, then,
but as for me, I just liked the taste, and I was what they called a fun drunk.
Yeah, that's a good thing. But it's better to be a fun drunk than a really nasty one.
Yeah, that's true. But never know how it's going to affect anybody until you do it for a long time. And by the time you do it for a long time, well, how much better could you have been if you didn't? Obviously, if you do it for a long time, you get a problem.
Yeah,
at least for me.
What kind of fears did you find once you stopped drinking?
Well, the fear was that I wouldn't be as creative or funny, and it was sort of the same thing as, I guess, W.C. Field. If I don't drink, I'm not funny. Well, I had sort of built a shrine to that phobia I have a severely enlarged rationalization gland, as do many alcoholics, and it loves to hypersecrete, but just the fact I know I cannot drink like ordinary people, but I went to my first 18 months of sobriety. I went to meetings first thing in the morning and last thing at night for long enough and worked the steps, got a sponsor, got into service, and found that, I found in sobriety I could make people smile and laugh and forget their problems just as well, if not better, and I have been more prolific and more creative. I'd written about 100 songs when I was drinking, and now I've written an additional 500. So
I didn't know that, Bill.
Oh, yeah.
Good for you.
Composer's part of it. So, yeah, you can, if you get over any phobia you have and realize, just you come to accept, all right, I got a problem, but I was using the problem as an excuse to be better, and I wasn't. I was actually worth, gee, what a dummy. Why did I waste so much time? When I realized maybe it's the fact that I didn't get sober till I was 57, and I'm 64 now, so perhaps I think it's a lot more difficult, especially for patients or anybody who's a lot younger, because the younger you are, the less experience you have, the more likely you are to think that everybody does it. And a lot of people drink socially that don't have a problem. But maybe it's just wisdom.
Well, let's use the drinking problems to segue into in my earlier edition, it's chapter 54 from Paul's book, and it's, your titles are so clever, When Your System Crashes, and you talk about sexual problems. And I thought it would be valuable to the audience, the listening audience, to just go through some of these sexual problems. Are you okay with that, Paul? I know you can talk about anything.
I'm absolutely okay with that. I should have warned you earlier, but we're having a storm here on the coast of Oregon.
Oh.
And as the wind picks up, every once in a while the power will go. So if I just disappear on you, it's not because I was being rude.
Oh, no. All right. And Bill and I
because
will carry on
feels,
as best we can.
Because nature feels inadequate in your presence, so they have to just compensate by throwing their power around, you see. Nature is such an egotist.
You know, I used to look forward to power outages, and the local power company is so proud of itself because it's doing so much better. And that's a real sadness for me because it was... Having no power was an excuse just to sit back and relax. You can't do a darn thing. So, you know, progress is not necessarily a good thing for all.
But there are so many things that really compensate for living in Oregon, I'm sure, especially after Los Angeles.
Yeah, it's quite a change.
Yeah.
On the coast, up in Portland, or where?
We're in the middle of the state on the coast.
Coos Bay area?
We're about 2 hours north of Coos Bay.
Oh, okay. You'll be fine. PG&E has tentacles everywhere.
So, when your system crashes, you have a headline here, sex problems typically ascribed to man, and instead of talking about or having the title be impotence or erectile dysfunction, you say the bummer in your pants. And I really like it when you write, are these men simply bored limp with the type of sex they've been having for most of their lives? And I see that working with older couples who've been married a long time.
I'm wondering if it isn't the wives who are bored limp with it more often than the men.
It's often both.
Oh, boy.
And do you remember that when Viagra was approved in April of 1998, there were a number of so-called Viagra divorces where the guy could suddenly get an erection and his wife would say, "You've got to be kidding. You haven't been nice to me for the last 10 years.
Yeah.
And then she's often perimenopausal or menopausal, and if they haven't been having intercourse, in fact, you say that it's a good idea to go to a therapist if there are relationship problems. And you also say very, very well that when you have a man with ED, it's a lack of playfulness and resourcefulness on the part of the man and woman when they're confronted with a hard-on that's a no-show. So this whole business of performance anxiety in the relationship, and what else do you want to say about that, Paul?
The one thing I'd say about it, if you have erection problems, is the first thing you want to do is get a physical exam.
Right.
Because erection problems are often... they're often the messenger that you're having cardiac problems or circulation problems.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, they're more predictive than the old stress test, I do believe.
Mm-hmm.
Cardiac stress test. So we've now learned one of the first things to go if you're having cardiac issues are erections.
Yes. And yes.
So that's the first thing I would highly recommend.
And it's also, you talked about circulation problems. It can also be diabetes.
Yes.
Be the first harbinger of diabetes.
Absolutely. Diabetes as well. There is a couple of different things. So I wouldn't assume that it's just psychological.
When I was in graduate school 35 years ago, we were taught about impotence, as it was then called all the time, that it was 80% physiological and 20% psychological, and now it's just absolutely flip-flopped. It's now thought to be somewhere around 80% physiological and 20% psychological, but the problem is that even if a man's been suffering for some time and hasn't had any relief, then there are all the psychological overlays.
Right. You've got... You might have all sorts of relationship issues there that the last thing you want to do is just suddenly have a magical erection. I mean, that might be fine for the guy in his fantasies, but it doesn't necessarily work for his partner or for the relationship. So that's it depends. I think each couple is different. But even if it's been physiological, the lack of erection, certainly it becomes a good excuse to reevaluate.
Absolutely. I mean, that's what brings a lot of... If a couple comes in and the presenting problem is erectile dysfunction and he hasn't been to a urologist, I always send him right away. But then sometimes they want to do sex therapy like right away, and I determine that they have lots of relationship problems. So I say, no, we've got to do some mediation first.
What kind of mediation do you do?
Well, let's look at the relationship, and I'm thinking back to a study, the Massachusetts Male Aging Study. It was a cross-sectional random sample of 1,700 men between 40 and 70 years of age. And, I mean, this is some years ago, but three psychological profiles turned out to be strongly linked to impotence in this Massachusetts study. And they were depressed men, angry men, whether they were expressed or repressed, and wimpy men. And what they meant by that was men who are easily intimidated and have difficulty making decisions.
Now, did they find that, I mean, how did they tease out whether the anger and the depression weren't a result of the impotence, or were they helping to fuel the impotence?
Well, I don't recall the study that well, but there were lots of self-reports. And, you know, it was a study done in the late 80s, but it was the first large study of its sort.
Yeah.
So it was a study that Dr. Walter Bortz and I used when we did our studies on aging and sexuality, and we did a 3-week course at the Palo Alto Senior Center. And maybe it's because of the presence of Stanford University, but the seniors in this study were so well educated. And for the first time ever in any of their activities at the Palo Alto Senior Center, there were more men than women who attended.
Wow.
Yeah, and we gave a questionnaire, and we did a 6-month follow-up. And it was very... It was positive. I mean, but most of those folks at that time, and this is before, this was 1996, so it was before Viagra, but the biggest problem for these guys was lack of erection, and the biggest problem for the women was lack of opportunity.
When you say lack of opportunity, what do you mean?
Not enough old guys.
Yeah, we start croaking a lot earlier than women do.
We have to teach our old men how to live longer and live healthier. And it reminds me of a joke about the woman who walks in. She's in a senior home, but they're active seniors. And she walks into the TV room, and there are two old guys in the watching TV. And she's got her hand curled up, and she says, "Anybody who can guess what's in my hand can have sex with me tonight." One old guy looks up and says, "An elephant?" She says, "Well, close enough." Hey, Bill, do you have any elderly sex jokes that you want to share?
I don't remember what you were talking about.
Okay.
Was it good for me, too?
Okay, well, so the guy that's having ED, that's a big problem, and you do distinguish in your book, Paul, and I think this is so good, that while a woman who's learning to have orgasms or somebody who's been sick, they'll look at their sexuality in a different way, maybe as a journey, a process. And then you do say that some impotent men, on the other hand, just want their dicks to get hard. No learning, no journey.
Well, I guess my sense is that we need to learn at every stop along the way.
Yeah.
And stops along the way. You know what makes me aroused on occasion is a chance to say that it's a wonderful folks. How's that for a segue? Talking about sex, we've already burned up in a storm in Oregon and muggy weather in Honolulu and whatever's in Seattle and whatever in New York. It's time to take a brief break for our host station to make sponsorship announcements. And once again, if you'd like to call and if you'd like to get that wonderful book, don't be shy. Be the first caller. There might not be a storm where you are, so you can get through to 1-888-874-4888 toll free, listening to us right here on Are You Ready For It?
You are listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Are you a conscious college student? If you're interested in progressive news and politics, we want to hear from you. The Progressive Radio Network is looking for radio hosts to discuss college life and the issues dealing with being in a university. Send an email to karalee@garynoel.com, karalee@garynoel.com, or call 646-307-4482 and tell me your radio experience and any idea you could contribute to PRN.
Hi, Hi, I'm Allison Rose Levy. I've been a health journalist for 25 years. I'm currently blogging on the Huffington Post. After more than two decades of studying, talking about, exchanging, and reporting on integrative well-being and collective psychology, I think we're ready to step up to the next level. On Connect the Dots, we're going to reach beyond the merely individual look at health to look at the community, societal, and global level of what we need to address to better our health. Please join me Saturdays at noon Eastern Standard Time on the Progressive Radio Network, and I look forward to dialoguing with you.
The shaky economy, peak oil, and now an unstable climate. Get the inside story with Alex Smith on Radio EcoShock. Top scientists find a looming catastrophe while activists try for change. Experts, authors, and alternative media from around the world and around the corner. Hear it all. Radio EcoShock every Saturday afternoon at 2 o'clock. Listen free and live free right here on PRN, ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com.
This is Peter Roth, the host of Energy Stew, which airs on Thursday nights at 8 p.m. My show interviews fascinating authors, inventors, and researchers of new understandings, techniques, and discoveries that can enhance and transform our lives. What is our potential and how can we fulfill it to the max? To find out, tune into Energy Stew and Peter Roth at 8 p.m. Thursdays on Progressive Radio Network.
You are listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
And we are back with Wiley and Sage, Love, Lust, and Laughter. If you're within the sound of my voice, you have ears. What a wonderful thought. And a functioning brain, which can function even better if you give us a call at 1-888-874-4888. That beautiful copy of Guide to Getting It On could be yours, first caller. And now here is our host, who is incomparably lovely, very erotic, sensual, sensuous, and senseful. Here she is, Dr. Diana Wiley.
Well, thank you, Billy.
You're welcome.
You're making my day in gray Seattle. You asked how it was here. It's gray.
Yeah, I'm gray. Well, you know.
So, we've spent some time with Dr. Paul talking in the first half of the show about his chapter, When Your System Crashes. We spent a lot of time on erectile dysfunction, and I thought we'd discuss one more problem in this chapter for men, and then we'll move on to women. And the problem is, as you title it, not being able to come with a partner. So, well, you say some guys called retarded ejaculators, honest.
Was it good for me, too? I don't know. Ask yourself. I am me. Oh.
Well, retarded, most of it's now, it's inhibited. Isn't it usually called inhibited?
Well, I hear it as delayed.
Delayed, that's it. Delayed.
Okay.
Yeah. So we're delayed ejaculation, and I think you do have a whole chapter on that. But, in fact, you include that on your website. Would you give our the updated in your sixth edition? Would you give where people can find that for the listeners?
Sure.
Thank you.
It's at guidetogettingiton.com. So it's just guidetogettingiton.com.
Yeah, and then you have chapter 57.
You go on the freebies section,
yeah,
and you'll see there's a free chapter on premature ejaculation, a free chapter on delayed ejaculation, and a free chapter on, it's called losing your V-card or losing your virginity.
Yes. Okay, good. And these are all free, listeners, and Paul writes so well and with humor. And so I encourage you to do that. Go and navigate around the website. It's fascinating. You write that many of these men with delayed ejaculation have concerns about losing control or becoming too vulnerable, or even an unconscious fear of getting a partner pregnant or somehow causing her damage. And that's been my experience with treating delayed ejaculators, that there are all these psychological overlays. And so you talk about that and some solutions for it. Would you like to speak a little more about that?
Well, it's it's an interesting issue, you know.
Yes.
You've got a guy who's got a really very rigid erection.
Mm-hmm.
We normally think, wow, he's very aroused.
Mm-hmm.
But for males with delayed ejaculation, we're not so sure if their erection is really related to deeper levels of arousal. So they may have a perfectly good erection, but it doesn't mean they're anywhere near or sexually aroused enough to arrive at an orgasm or ejaculation. There could be, as you know, any number of reasons, some having to do with concerns about the partner getting pregnant. Some might have to do with just whatever ejaculation might mean to them in terms of being with a partner. Some are able to ejaculate when they're masturbating, but not with a partner. So if they're alone and masturbating, they might be able to ejaculate. But that's a big problem with a partner. There's all sorts of different aspects to the issue, and there's also different types. Now, if you have never had this problem before and you just started to have it, and there's no good psychological reason, I mean, your partner wasn't found with your best friend's teenage son, right? or there's no
what a
no,
shock.
Yeah, there's no psychological change that could be the reason for it. Then you definitely need to get yourself a physical exam. Just make sure something else isn't going on.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not that unusual for it to
Diana?
Just creep up on you like this.
Yes. Unless
there's a good psychological reason.
Hi, Paul,
Diana.
We might have a caller, so let's listen.
We do have a caller. His name is Daniel, and he's calling from Connecticut.
Connecticut. Connecticut works for mailing a book.
Sure.
Good. So, Daniel, what is your question?
Well, my question is that I hear that all these stories or those studies about people who've been having problems up to 70 or 75. I'm 85.
Wow, Daniel.
And so I have the problem. I didn't have it 5 years ago when I was 80, but I have it now.
You're talking about delayed ejaculation.
Well,
no, I think he's talking about erection issues.
Okay, we were talking, before.
But getting an erection that's worth anything.
Yeah. So have you talked to your healthcare provider about it?
I'm sorry?
Have you talked to your physician about it?
Well, I have an appointment in the next few days.
Yeah, be sure and talk about it. And it could be that you might be a great candidate for a drug like Viagra or Cialis. Or
I see.
So I think it would be have a good conversation. And don't, if your healthcare provider...
I never tried the Viagra.
Yeah, some healthcare providers in their own mind... If they're younger, they might think of you like they would their own parents, and they might get embarrassed.
Uh-huh.
So you may need to help he or she with that and
uh-huh.
just say, well, that's your issue.
Right.
I need to get this thing working again.
Okay.
I think that's very good advice because some MDs are dismissive. They'll minimize the problem, and particularly at your age. I want to congratulate you, Daniel, on hanging in and remaining sexual. Do you have a partner now
who's willing to do that.
Good. Is she a fairly new partner?
Well, for the last few years.
Okay. And how old is your partner, if I may ask?
Fairly new.
She's under 80.
Under 80.
That is fairly new.
Young.
Yes.
Well, you know,
you're robbing the cradle.
Yeah.
Yes.
No, I think it's great, and of course, what we know is that by remaining sexual as you age, you're much more likely to be happy, and you're much more likely to be a healthy person if you have an enthusiastic partner.
Yeah.
And you indicated she was. That's a big help.
Yeah.
And you're much more likely to live longer if you continue to be sexual. But also I would say to you, Daniel, you may get some help from one of the erectile dysfunction drugs, but just remember, sex does not equal intercourse. There are so many other things, as you probably have discovered, that can be very pleasurable.
Yes. Well, thank you very much.
Well, now you stay on the line because you're going to get this book, and you'll love reading it.
Right.
Read it with your partner. It's so informative, and it's humorous, and it's just the best book going.
Okay.
So would you stay on the line and give Katie, our producer, your address, and then she'll let Paul know directly what it is.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks for calling, Daniel. Right.
Yeah. I love stories like that. Here he is, 85.
I love the fact that she's underage, too. What do you mean? She's 79 or whatever it is. That's underage, but that's wonderful.
Yeah. No, it's just... And that he had the courage to call in. And he wants to continue to inform himself and read your book. And you do get reader feedback because your website is set up for that. And I noticed going through, most of your people are in their 20s and 30s, some in their 40s. But wouldn't it be great if Daniel could write in? I mean, you need some older folks there, too.
Sure do.
Maybe I should write in since I'm an older folks.
There you go.
But you've
already got the book.
Well, I do. But the thing about Paul is he keeps updating it, and the reader feedback is pretty important for you. Talk about that a little, if you will.
Well, I'm constantly looking at sex surveys from the website. I mean, I must look at couple thousand a year of people who visited the website and filled out the survey, and that's very helpful because I'm constantly asking new questions, trying to get a sense of what's going on out there, because it's very, very, very easy to just think of it as, wow, this is still as it was when I was a kid, because I don't think we think of ourselves as being all that old. But there's a huge gap in years between our age and the people who this book was written for, which is in their teens and 20s. It requires constant awareness of the new trends, the new things, and it's so easy to make judgments and to say, well, that's not the way it should be done. But if we remember... at the turn of the last century, not to 2000, but to 1900, when the telephone was just coming in, and the car was coming in, the radio was coming in, everyone said, I mean, people at the time said, this is just awful. This is the end of family values. This is the end of relationships as we know it. You know, this is just terrible. But these have become such an ingrained part of our culture. We can't even imagine culture without them.
Indeed.
And then one week after the invention, Alexander Graham Bell got a call, and his wife said, honey, Suzette, I don't know, somebody's breathing heavily on the other line. Call the cops.
Well, you know, that didn't happen that long after the invention. It's frightening how, well, not frightening, it's amazing how many miles, thousands of miles of telephone cable went down in the 20 years after the founding of the telephone.
You commented in last week's program that with these 2,000 sex surveys you read a year, that there's not much research done on pleasure. And that's a shame. You know, Stella Resnick, who I'm hoping to get on the show soon, she pointed that out years ago at one of the conferences, and then the result was her book, The Pleasure Zone. Mm-hmm. And where she writes about all sorts of pleasures, not just sexual pleasure. But there's been so much focus on what can go wrong and not enough on pleasure.
Well, that's where the funding sources are. Your funding sources are on people and products that hope to be sold to people.
Mm-hmm.
Things are going wrong.
Yeah.
When things are going right, when there's a lot of pleasure, it's a harder sell.
It's analogous to preventive medicine. You know, it's not very sexy to do things that are healthy to prevent illness. And again, I suppose it has to do with funding sources. I heard a urologist that I work with, collaborate with, he pointed out that there are so many drugs to prevent incontinence. And, you know, we don't need another drug. and yet, of course, the money's there.
Yeah, that's where the money is. And unfortunately, drugs for incontinence aren't that good right now. So
they're not that good? How do you mean?
Oh, they have lots of side effects.
Oh, side effects, of course.
And it's interesting you say incontinence, because as you're talking about people get older, that's one of the main reasons why a lot of women stop having sex is because they're concerned about incontinence.
Yeah.
And it's certainly a reason why a lot of pregnant women and women shortly after their pregnancies stop having sex is, again, they're worried about incontinence.
Another reason to do Kegel exercises to contract those PC muscles.
If it's related to pregnancy, I think absolutely. I'm always a little cautious about seeing Kegels as the universal cure, because sometimes I would always prefer, if possible, that a woman see a pelvic floor specialist first. I've heard of enough problems. You know, what if the Kegels actually make the situation worse in your particular situation?
You raise a very good point, and maybe that's a good segue into the rest of another part of your chapter, when your system crashes, and that's painful intercourse. And I have lots of clients who have this, and it's only been in the last, I'd say, 10, 15 years that we have physical therapists who specialize in pelvic pain. And
right.
It can be very helpful for these women to go and learn how to stretch their vaginal openings and how to reach up inside and the biofeedback and the dilators and all of that.
Well, and you can have an imbalance. You can have one side of the vagina, that set of muscles contracting, while the others aren't.
Mm-hmm.
So talk to athletes, college athletes, one of the things I say is, if you have a repetitive, if you're in your sport, you do something repetitive, like serving a tennis ball or serving volleyball. So if you, or maybe shot put or discus or javelin, there's a real possibility that one side of your vagina, the muscles might start contracting in your pelvis involuntarily.
Hmm.
Sometimes these women who are top flight athletes who do repetitive stress or repetitive actions on that stress one side of the body can find that intercourse becomes painful. And,
that's fascinating. Now, see, I'm learning something from you. That's great to know.
Susan Kellogg, who's just a top flight specialist.
Yes.
Actually, I originally learned that from her.
And, mm-hmm.
She's got some top flight athlete patients who they really need to go in every couple of months and work on that side of the pelvic floor that's just in constant contraction. Now, if you were to do Kegel exercises and you have that problem, you're going to make it worse.
Right. You're absolutely right.
So if you can find a really good pelvic floor specialist or therapist, that's truly where I would start.
First stop. Well, I'm working with two in the Seattle area. There are more.
That's great.
But it's and they're very specifically trained, and between the talk therapy, which they do with me, and some relaxation exercises that they also do here, and then the PT, doing the pelvic floor, often progress is made.
Yes, there's a lot of progress that can be made. Now, there's all kinds of different reasons for painful intercourse. Sometimes it's not the vagina at all, but rather the introitus or the area on the outside between the labia. There can be skin issues there that are very tender and sensitive. So one needs to do a really good history and a really good diagnosis to even find out where and when the pain is occurring.
Yes, I always ask, is it at the entrance? And if it's at the entrance where the entrance is contracting, the entrance to the vagina, then it's very likely vaginismus. And as you point out in your book, and as I've seen in clients, vaginismus is often an emotional, psychological reaction to some earlier trauma, where perhaps as a young girl she was penetrated and she didn't want to be, and it was confusing, and now so the body's taking over and saying, I don't want anything else in there.
Well, it can even be from it doesn't have to be a huge trauma in that sense. It can even be a physical exam.
You're right,
that was
a doctor's
painful.
Exam.
Or because sometimes you'll say, well, you know, a woman will say, I've never had anything like that, sexual whatever. And then you say, well, did you, you know, can you recall any exams that were painful? Oh, yeah, that one, boy. Or maybe here's a scenario. A woman is taking antihistamines for a cold. Well, that's also suddenly going to start drying up her vaginal lubrication. And so maybe intercourse starts to become painful.
Right.
And then long after she stopped taking the antihistamines, her muscles have become trained to expect the pain down there. So the second she starts to have intercourse, you know, the intercourse is about to happen, boy, she's suddenly tense down there.
Yes, that's right. And it's a real problem for both partners.
Yes.
Because the man really... doesn't, most of my couples where this is an issue, the man doesn't want to hurt his partner. And so instead of having pleasure, there's pain. And when you and then the woman's tensing up, and it gets worse unless there are proper interventions. You say in your book something that I actually didn't know till I read this. This is under your heading, painful intercourse. Deep thrusting pain can sometimes be caused by constipation or pelvic inflammatory disease. Shallow thrusting pain has a larger range of possible causes, from the adhesions under the clitoral hood and episiotomy scars to yeast infections, herpes sores, and vaginal changes associated with menopause.
Yeah, I think I've spent... a lot more time now on actually problems resulting from childbirth.
Yes.
When a lot of physicians don't get that, you know, an episiotomy scar can really mess things up. And again, that's we try to encourage physicians when they're doing the 6 or whatever 8 week exam after childbirth. To really try to get a sense if that area around the episiotomy, or if there were tears down there, if there's scar tissue forming, and what happens when you push down on it gently. The woman tense up. Well, if she tenses up in your office when you're gently pushing down on that area, guess what?
The perineum.
Yeah, guess what? Intercourse isn't going to feel too good.
Exactly.
And so we try to get physicians to be more alert to this, because then they're, you know, then you maybe can try to get the woman to a pelvic floor specialist, and they can gently try to stretch that scar tissue and work with it. So that's there's a lot of different things. Again, they're now finding also there's dermatological issues in that area. Remember, the vulva it's halfway between inside and outside. It's not like the rest of your skin on your body. It's a transitional area. And and it's got to handle a lot of fluids. It's got to handle menstrual flow.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's got to handle a lot more acidity than the skin on the rest of the body. So it's a very specialized skin.
That's such an interesting point. Yes.
And so there's lots of different things that we don't know about it, and we're just discovering that there's skin infections that we haven't even been able to diagnose because we haven't had the capacity, the ability to diagnose.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So.
Well, there's so much here. As we are coming to the end of this show, it's gone by so quickly, I would like to ask you, and I read this, so I know you have the answer, what's the best sex tip ever?
Oh, gosh, I've forgotten.
Okay, I'm going to remind you.
You can give me a clue.
In 1945, it was $10.
You said to really listen.
Yeah, that's a pretty darn good one.
And I spoke to Pepper Schwartz's class of 700. I've done it twice now at University of Washington. And you probably know Pepper Schwartz. Her name, she's written about 14 books, and she's a professor of... And this particular class is the sociology of sexuality. And so I read that you and quoted you to her class because these are 19-year-olds, 20-year-olds, and they need a lot of sex education. And I think that's a very good sex tip to really, really listen. And they also, they'll ask, well, are there other ways of communicating about sex besides talking? And I some people think buying a Porsche is one form of nonverbal sexual communication. But there's also the power of touch, soft, seductive, shy, reassuring, urgent.
I think this is a real issue. It's a constant issue. I'm flying out to Vermont in a few days to talk to Middlebury College. Talk there, and one of the things I've been told by their sex therapist there and is that students don't know how to ask for what they want.
Oh, I think that's so true. I think back to when I was in my 20s, and I didn't marry the first time till I was 2 months short of 30, so, I had a long time to be single.
Yeah.
I didn't know much. I mean, it was years before I became a therapist, so I was embarrassed to talk. I was not very good at it.
Yeah, and they still have this problem, in spite of everything that's out there.
There wasn't as much when I was in my 20s. I remember looking around for information.
Yeah, but even with what we now know as to be the flood of information,
yes,
still the same problem. So it wasn't just a lack of information that was the problem.
Right. Well, you certainly give us tons of information in your book, Guide to Getting It On, and our lucky caller, Daniel, will receive a copy, and thank you, Paul, for that. And thank you for being our guest here for two successive Fridays. It's just been great. And if maybe a few months from now, may I call you again and get
Absolutely.
You back on the show?
Absolutely. And
thank
the two
you.
Of you take care.
Thank you very much. You as well, Paul, and many thanks. And Billy, I'll let you take us out.
All right. Weather the storm, and don't forget his website is guidetogettingiton.com. You're listening to Wiley and Sage on Progressive Radio Network. We hope to see you next week. Until then, from stormy Honolulu, rarely stormy Oregon, stormy Seattle, this is Billy Sage saying, ho'onepo nepo, stay juicy, and aloha.
probabilmente ha messo lo schiavo d'amore. Ti divertirai.